Hi, everybody. We have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies. Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and our guest today has something like 100 credits.
4,872 credits. That's an approximation, but probably accurate.
He just told us that he's been in show business 61 years, which doesn't make him ancient because he started really young.
I was going to say, he's 62, so that is...
We're welcoming today Clint Howard. Hey, Clint.
Hello, and it's wonderful to be on, guys. It's such a pleasure. I feel like I'm almost in the company of family in a weird way.
But that's exactly what it is, and it's something that you understand well. You know, we're very lucky. It's so I have the worst dyslexia. So what my dad does is he reads and then tells me everything. So as soon as we found out we were going to get to speak to you, he ordered this book. And the book that I am holding is called The Boys, A Memoir of Hollywood and Family. And it's by Ron Howard and Clint Howard.
And it's a wonderful book.
My dad has been loving this book and sharing so many beautiful stories with me and with my mom. And it's, you know, something you and I share something. We're both incredibly lucky. We have really amazing parents who are really good people, more than being talented or skilled or anything else. They're really good people. And what they wanted us to be was really good people. And aren't we lucky?
Lucky does not even really begin to describe the situation. I mean, you know, I'm first of all extremely grateful, feel fortunate. Getting to be in mom and dad's company was a blast for growing up. I mean, and listen, as Ron and I talked about it in The Boys, you know, dad was really a special guy and mom was sitting right at his right side. I mean, they were a team. They really, truly were a team. But my dad, coming out of Oklahoma with virtually no experience at all, ended up having this wonderful attitude and about show business. He was not intimidated by anybody. He wouldn't bully people, but no situation was too big for Rance Howard.
Mm-hmm.
No. And as we, by osmosis, as Ron and I sort of watched dad navigate through, you know, the business, again, he was 30 years my senior. My dad was 30 when I was born. So, you know, when he was a very young father, he was 30, 31, 32 years old when the Andy Griffith Show started.
Mm.
So for him to be able to navigate through those tricky waters of having a child actor, and they wanted to make, you know, the Sears and Roebuck company wanted to have Opie line of clothing. And my dad passed on it. He said, my son is not a clothes salesman. He is an actor. And it was, you know, it was something that my dad had wonderful instincts, you know, and I love him to this day. He's left the world. He's left us. We lost dad a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But my goodness, you know, I think about him often and I cheer him regularly.
Yeah. Well, and there is something really special about someone being in the movies, but also being in the movies for such a long time. You can visit them. And it's the same with TV. You can visit them. And that's such a gift that you can see them when you want to. And your mom too.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, yes, you're right about that. And I don't want to contradict you, but my real memories of my dad,
of course,
are far, far away from a movie set. Although my favorite picture, I do have a picture of my dad, and it is it's going to get me emotional right now when I'm thinking of it. It's, he has me in his lap, and it's, we were working on the movie Gentle Giant, which was the precursor to Gentle Ben. And he had his arm around me, and I was leaning up against him, and it was that warmth that I had with my dad. Now, that was a show business moment.
Yeah.
But in general, it's those human connections that I have, that I, my memories. Listen, I'll come to my mom was the all-time PTA mother, you know, and my dad was the guy that got drafted to put up all the carnival stuff when the PTA would have their one day carnival at Stevenson wow. Elementary School. My dad would get drafted to be the guy that would put all those booths together. That's my memories of Pop.
Wow.
Now, but he also gave you really concrete and very astute advice, as he did first to Ron, your older brother, then Ronnie, and then to you. I want you to, I don't want to try to paraphrase it, but he was your acting coach, and both of you, he was your acting coach when you were young. And you take great pride in the fact that he taught you how to be honest in every scene of every film or TV show you did. And you guys took great pride in being able to cry real tears.
Hmm.
Yes. I mean, yes, you're right, Leonard. It was very simple. Dad's acting kind of technique was very simple. Was first of all, look your acting partners in the eye, you know, make sure you make a good eye contact with them. And listen, really listen to what they're saying, not just wait for your cues or not think about other things. You got to focus, but also in building, in doing the homework for as a little actor, it's not just memorizing the lines. And I use this to this day. It's not memorizing the lines. Oh, that's a last ditch thing. Is okay, just freaking learn it. No, you develop where that character has been, where he wants to go, and what are his intentions in this moment? Because a film is a series of moments. And every human being has a motive and intention. Every human being has been somewhere and they want to try to go somewhere. So if you establish those things, if you set those things into place in your mind, it, at least for me, it helps me, you know, minimize that tightness in my stomach and that kind of rattling in my brain that happens with so many actors, I mean, me included. It's just, but these are tools that Dad gave me to help my acting. But listen, and again, it was just acting is a small part of it. I mean, you guys, the public got to see me on screen.
Yeah.
The public didn't see me pitch my first Little League baseball game.
Of course.
The public didn't see me go off to Jordan Junior High School for the very first time as a seventh grader. One of my only sleepless nights in my entire junior career was going from sixth grade to seventh grade, going from one classroom to going to a school where there was going to be seven periods. And my God, there was going to be PE where we were going to have to shower. And those things, my dad stayed up with me all night. I'd had all this experience in show business, but my God, going to seven periods in junior high school was going to just tear me up. That's the memory I have of my dad.
Of course. Well, and again, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. He was a real person and it's a beautiful thing. It is also incredibly human that you figured out how to live life on a set, but being just a kid is a hell of a lot harder sometimes. And exactly what you're talking about is pretty damn scary.
Well, yeah, you know, and then of course there's the absurdities. There's the absurdities of life. I remember really my mom, they both came from the Midwest, Oklahoma, you know, and my mom was a sewer. She did the sewing. Now she didn't make my clothes, but she hemmed them. And my mom was of the era where, you know, there's that expression waiting for the flood.
Uh-huh.
Well, my pants for several years of my juvenile career my pants were always just way too high. You
they
know?
Were prepared at all times. God forbid you so, were ready.
And, you know, listen, the book is called The Boys because that was the expression that Mom coined the three of us, because she considered Dad, although Dad didn't act like a boy, but the three of us.
No, it's her boys.
The boys. But Mom's influence on Dad and on us was unparalleled. And, you know, listen, not that people don't have idiosyncrasies. And, you know, my mom, probably a little OCD, although back then there was no way anybody was ever going to, you know, categorize her. It wasn't like they didn't
We didn't have names for symptoms or syndromes or any of those things.
Yeah. But still, I mean, again, and Leonard, I really appreciate you bringing up The Boys, and because it's something that Ron and I were really proud of, and it did real well. We're really happy. I mean, as an author, I can say, my goodness, I am on the New York Times bestseller list. New York Times bestseller.
Damn straight.
And you were a budding journalist when you were in school.
Yeah,
very much so. Very much so. In fact, you know, it was not a foregone conclusion that I was going to be an adult actor. Yeah. I mean, Ron and I both had this wonderful thing of having careers as kids, but Dad and Mom always said, listen, if you guys don't like doing it, if you guys find that you want to have something better to find something else to do, do it. And, you know, I searched out journalism. In fact, it was in the seventh grade that I had my first journalism class, and I fell in love with being that guy that could put together a lead, who, what, when, where, and why. And I had a great journalism teacher when I started out, a fellow named Mr. Campbell, Steve Campbell. And he taught me a lot of the fundamentals about asking questions and sorting out the answers and then being able to lay it out in a story. I went to college. I went to Pepperdine for a short period of time. And I was in the communications department, and I got a big acting job. And that acting job, it was actually more than an acting job. It was an acting job and a writing job. My brother and I got hired by NBC to write a TV movie called Cotton Candy. And that was right in my freshman year of college. Hmm. And I decided to take the cash, you know, and go off and make a movie, which, you know, I've gone through life kind of regretting that I didn't have the full-on college career. But, you know, my life has been full.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think you're all right. though anybody who lives in Los Angeles and knows Pepperdine, Pepperdine is in Malibu, and it has the best view, I would say, of damn near any college because you're staring at the ocean.
Well, it was about that time that I sort of stubbed my toe in life. And I started drinking too much, and I started, you know, smoking cannabis, I was out there in Malibu, and it was beautiful. I was staying on campus, and I had a dorm where I could go downstairs. I was on the second floor, but I could walk downstairs with a beach chair, sit my beach chair on the lawn, stare out at the Pacific Ocean and do my homework. But for some idiotic reason, I got it in my head that I would much rather go back to Burbank and hang out with my buddies.
Well, I mean, at least Malibu is only a drive away. This is the thing, though. Careers. Every decision leads to something else.
Yeah.
And if it's something that excited you and you thought, well, yeah, I should try this.
What was now when Ron started working steadily, and you're 4 or 5 years younger?
I'm five years younger.
5 years younger.
Yeah.
What was your first exposure to a set, to working TV set or a movie set?
Oh, Jiminy Christmas. You know, to be honest, I don't remember. I was two. The Andy Griffith Show, I think I did 5 episodes of The Andy Griffith Show, playing a character called Leon. Mm-hmm. And in December of 1961, it was damn near the end of the year, but it was 1961, I worked for the first time on a movie set, a television set, and I have no memories of it.
No.
A few years later, when I was 4 or 5 years old, I do have memories of going on television sets. I did an episode of Bonanza called All Ye His Saints. which was, it was the first year they did Bonanza when it was just Dan Blocker and Michael Landon and Lauren Green. That who was the actor?
Pernell Roberts had
Pernell Roberts left the show. And so they did it. They wrote an episode. In fact, the fellow that wrote Brian's song and William Blinn wrote this episode about a young boy whose father gets accidentally shot and he's in a coma. And this Indian that works at the ranch tells the little boy that God lives in the mountain. So I take off on foot. I take off on a donkey to go up to the mountain to talk to God because God can solve all the problems. So that it became an episode. It was a wonderful episode. And that is the first time, that's the first credit that I have where I can really remember, you know, traveling up to Tahoe to work because we filmed for 4 or 5 days up in Tahoe. And then, of course, after that, I got on Star Trek. I did an episode of Star Trek, which I have memories being a science fiction show. I have memories of working on Star Trek. And, you know, Leonard, I've always been comfortable on a set. And mm-hmm. you know, I learned by osmosis. I have no memories of seeing a camera for the first time. Mm-hmm. But I obviously was not intimidated by the process. I could, if somebody told me to walk over there and stand on that mark and say my lines, I didn't have any panic. I just mm-hmm. did it.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like learning, you know, to play baseball. If you've got an older brother who's a baseball player,
yeah.
and it's nothing, it's not, he's doing it. I can do it. I watched my brother do it. Yeah. And so I could do it. And there's one more thing about that. Is that Ron and I never talked shop. Mm. He never ran lines with me. He never, you know, Dad was the guy. Dad was the guy that you know, sometimes Mom would do it if Dad was off working, but generally it was Dad who was the mentor. Dad was the guy that was the dialogue inculcator. But and coming home from work, we talked baseball, we talked sports. Mm-hmm. Ron was a great older brother. He's a great, I mean, I've said this 1,000 times. He's a Hall of Fame movie director,
mm-hmm.
Hall of Fame. He's a better big brother than he is a movie director. And I can say that with 100% confidence,
mm-hmm.
you know, so having him was a great advantage. Dad was a great advantage. And then being in the shadow of Ron was also a great advantage.
Right.
Well, I should add that Bryce Dallas Howard wrote the foreword for your book. So you went you went all the way. You went all the generations in. I also have to say that the photo on the cover, please, folks, look up this book and look up this photo on the cover.
Look it up and then buy it.
And buy it.
And read it and enjoy it.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you.
Speaking as a fellow author.
Yeah, right. But the photo on the cover is so beautiful and pure. It's the three of you. It's the boys. It's the three of you. It is just the most, it's the warmest shot. And to me, I'm tearing up, to be honest, I'm tearing up looking at it because it shows your relationship. And you're all genuinely smiling. You know, like your dad couldn't look more proud and you both just look happy. And yeah. It's perfect.
Oh, no, it is. I mean, that was the obvious book cover.
Yeah, yeah.
All the photos that got presented, there was no doubt that was going to be the book cover.
Yeah.
And that photo was in Dad's archives, you know, for years, and along with other photos, you know. Listen, CBS and the Andy Griffith Show, they took a lot of photos.
Yeah.
And you know, my dad had them all. Dad, a very interesting guy, because Dad kept all this stuff. And once he passed, then it came down to, you know, Ron and I, you know, splitting them up. And I keep a lot of the photo out, the personal family photo albums here. It's that Dad never looked backwards. Mom used to be a huge person that would put photo albums together. I mean, of the relatives when they came to town, going to Disneyland and us going to the Queen Mary and all these adventures that we would have as a family. And Dad would never look at the photo albums.
Hmm.
Dad was always kind of a forward thinking guy, right until he made his last movie called Appleseed that I worked on. I had a wonderful scene with my dad in that movie. And it was just literally about, oh, 3 or 4 weeks after he got home from location that he fell ill. And then it took him about a month to pass away, but he worked right up. He was always looking for work. He would still be a guy still, even though the world had become digital and the Variety and the Reporter were online. Dad would still get the Variety and the Reporter sent to his home, and he would go through the production lists. In the Variety, they used to have the production, not the reports, but the notices.
Yeah.
And Dad would read through those notices every time they came out, which was once a week. He would find some connection. He would find somebody that he knew that was producing or directing or some situation. And then he would call his agent and say, listen, I know those people. there's a wonderful story that my dad had about Johnny Depp and Gore Verbinski. Mm-hmm. And Gore Verbinski directed Dad in a Skittles commercial when that's what Gore was doing for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad had worked with Johnny a few times on various movies, including Ed Wood movie.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had a great role in Ed Wood. But anyway, Dad read that they were doing a movie called The Lone Ranger. And Gore Verbinski was directing it. Johnny Depp was in it. And my dad like circled it and called his agent and said, listen, you got to get me in on this. I know these people. It's a Western and it's got a guy that directed me. And okay, the agent sent in the information and Dad didn't hear anything. And Dad was sort of crushed. And Dad maybe thought, well, maybe Gore doesn't want to have anybody get reminded that he was a commercial director at one time, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he had kind of given up, and about, oh, I don't know, 2 months later, Dad got a phone call and said, oh, Rance, you're booked on Lone Ranger. We didn't tell you, you're booked. And Dad got to go up to New Mexico and Wyoming for about 6 weeks and work on the Lone Ranger.
Man,
that great.
That's perfect.
That's great.
That's perfect.
Hey, Billy, why don't we tell them what we're about, man?
So we're here to welcome you to the Madhouse Chronicles. It's a talk show with myself, Billy Morrison.
And me, Ozzy Osbourne.
This man, Prince of Darkness. And we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Come and join Ozzy and myself. Visit osbournemediahouse.com to get special access to...
Come on!
What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
Now, but when you got cast on the TV series Gentle Ben, that was shooting in Florida, and your father went with you, and you were there for months at a time shooting two seasons in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was your constant companion, as well as your coach.
My dad and I had the ultimate setup down there in Florida. Ivan Tors, the producer, put us up with, we had a house 1 year, and the next year we lived in a penthouse apartment overlooking the Rickenbacker Causeway and Biscayne Bay. And we were two bachelors. Mom and dad would come down, Mom and Ron would come down and visit us whenever the Andy Griffith Show would go on hiatus, which would be, once every 6 weeks, the Andy Griffith Show would shut down. And they would write, Andy really loved to write. And the Andy Griffith Show would do six episodes and then take a break and take like 2 weeks off. And they would write and get the next batch of episodes ready. Well, Ron and Mom would fly down to Florida and spend a week with us, which was fun. It was, obviously, it was fun for Mom and Dad.
Yeah.
And it was fun for me and Ron because we could hang out. And also, listen, down there in Florida, Mom is a redhead, was a redhead. And Ron, when he had hair, was a redhead. And they would fly down there to Florida and get burnt to a crisp. And, you know, it was, I don't know what the Andy Griffith Show thought when Ron would come home and he would just be red faced for about 2 weeks. But Dad and I had it was an extra bonding experience. It was really, you know, Dad was close with Ron and close with me, but I may have been a little closer because, you know, at some point back in the 80s, Ron moved. He moved back to the New York area. And so I was the Howard boy that stayed around. I always lived within a couple of miles of Dad and Mom and Dad, and then Dad's second wife, Judy. I was very close to him. And it was, you know, Dad and I had a wonderful relationship.
It's beautifully described, too.
Yeah.
You guys really capture it. But
you're in Toluca Lake.
Yeah.
This, as I say, my dad's reading this. I call him my personal Cliff Notes, which again, to any dyslexic person is a godsend.
Hey, I've got something for you though. Ron and I spoke our own words. The audiobook is, and I'm now kind of big on that. I read, I've read hundreds of scripts and stuff and all, you know, but I like to listen to audiobooks. And Ron and I both speak our words, and it's available anywhere that audiobooks get distributed.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That's wonderful. My mom, who's also dyslexic, is big on Audible. She loves that because it does. It allows you to have that experience. And how cool that you guys did it. That's really special.
It was hard.
It is.
It was hard. And emotionally, it was hard.
Of course.
Various, you know, chapters, various parts of the book. It was, you know, literally one or two lines at a time. And I had a wonder, my wife, Kat, was so helpful. First of all, very helpful in keeping me focused to write the book, to write it. But then when it came time to do the audiobook, not just a cheerleader, that would be an understatement to say she's a cheerleader. But, you know, it was little recording studio in Burbank for a few days. We were doing it and, you know, teared up often.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'll tell you, my dad for the first time recorded one of his books. We just did it last year. It's really hard. It's another skill and it's not easy to do. And, you know, it's another thing. See, that's the thing.
I had done voiceovers for years.
Yeah. As I'm sure you
Entertainment Tonight, other shows where I've worked. But I'd never done reading an entire chapter, let alone an entire book of chapters.
It's a skill. They say, you know, people make things look easy, and then you try it and you go, oh, that's actually really difficult.
Well, you know, listen, technology helps a lot because they can get in there. I mean, talk about editing. They can get in there and just micro cut.
Yeah.
To the point where they have to be careful because they cut the humanity out of it. They can make somebody sound so smooth that they sound a little too smooth. I'm just listening to Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks has done a few audiobooks, and I'm listening to his main autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
And
never a bad pleasure, time.
What a pleasure to sit and listen to Mel.
Yeah.
Jesus. I do that every night for about 20 minutes.
Sounds great.
That sounds like my kind of meditation is just listening to Mel Brooks.
Now you've lived with people talking to you and asking you about Bruno the Bear for many decades now, but I want to know about the man who directed you, Riku Browning. When I saw his name when I was a kid, it's such an unusual name.
Yeah,
it really struck a chord in me. And then I read that he was the creature from the Black Lagoon. And I was even more intrigued with him. Yeah. And then I'm a compulsive credit reader, Clint. So in the 60s and 70s and 80s, I continued to see his name anytime there was an underwater, a major underwater sequence in a movie. And they happened to shoot it in Florida or perhaps the Caribbean. So he's made a big imprint.
Oh, Riku is. He's alive. He's alive. He's doing well. He's, you know, listen, he's older. He's in his 90s. He's what a sweet guy. I went back for a convention in Orlando and Kat insisted that we make a detour, go to Fort Lauderdale and take a day and go and see Rico. And it was, I hadn't seen him since I was about 15 years old. Mm-hmm. But Rico, yes, he also was the man that created Flipper, mm-hmm. you know, and all sorts of things. And he's what a wonderful man he is. And what is, again, he had the patience of Job to work with animals and kids. He directed a lot of Gentle Ben episodes. Mm-hmm. He directed me in a movie a few years later called Salty, which mm-hmm. was Rico was trying to do with a sea lion what Ivan Torres had done with a dolphin.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so he worked on that. So I thank you for bringing his name up. That he really is, one of my great memories was getting to hang around Rico and his family and the adventurers, especially because Rico, I did Salty when I was about 14 years old. And by then I had vivid memories. Mm-hmm. I had vivid memories of the nuances of making a movie. I mean, by that point, I probably could have been an assistant director, you know, honest to God. In fact, very early in my 20s, I thought to myself, I go, you know, maybe I was an assistant director in another lifetime, because my ability to see what a set is doing and see why it's not operating as well as it could operate and what needs to happen to get the day's work done,
mm-hmm.
you know.
You also, though, you have an incredible memory. Listening to you, you have an incredibly specific memory of everything. And that, especially considering how long you've worked, you know, it's amazing.
You know, here's an interesting thought. Yes, I do have a good memory. And thank God, Dad's second wife, Judy, had Alzheimer's. Mm. And watching that happen was sad and, you know, sad for her, sad for Dad, but very, very interesting to watch somebody's mind kind of crumble. And yeah. Judy said some very astute things as she was starting to lose her mind. One time she looked up at us because she goes, you know, it's like my brain is breaking off piece by piece,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then of course she said the thing right kind of towards the end. She says, I hope you all know I'm just acting. You know, so but you know what? Mom had a gift of gab, and Mom was a storyteller. I don't mean telling stories bigger than life. I mean telling stories like things that happened. And I have that gift.
Yeah, you do.
And so there are a lot of stories that at this point in my life, I'm not sure whether I'm remembering the moment or remembering telling the story.
Yes, yes. And how very, and not everybody is as candid about that as you.
Yeah, because you know what, Leonard, I do remember a lot of stuff,
mm-hmm.
but I also remember little nuances and, you know, like the famous story, not so famous, but when I went in to read for Star Wars, I went and read for Luke Skywalker, and I walked into the room and Francis Coppola was in the room. Fred Roose was in the room. I couldn't see George Lucas because he was in a leather chair turned around. I couldn't see him. He's a small guy. And he turned around and he looked at me and he went, Commander Baylock, Corbomite Maneuver, which was the character that I played in Star Trek and the episode that I did. And here I was 17 years old, trying to get an adult role.
Right.
The last thing I was expecting or wanted to have the director recall something I did when I was a baby.
Yeah.
And I remember this. And I also remember telling the story. After he said that, in my mind, I was smiling and I went, George, get a effing life. Because it was way before Star Trek had ever gone into syndication.
Sure.
Yeah.
He was an original Trek geek.
Yes. You
know? Yeah. And anyway, I've had the good fortune to spend some time with him and meet him. And, you know, Ron and him have a very close relationship. And he's a good dude. And you know, when I tell that story at a party or something, oh, George, get an effing life. Well, he obviously did have a pretty good effing life.
Yeah, it went okay. It went okay for him. Yes, yes. No, it's, again, when you've had the kind of career you've had, there's so many different things someone could come up to you and say, because you've done so much and so many different kinds of things. So whether someone recognizes you because you've been in Adam Sandler movies, or someone recognizes you because you've been in your brother's films, or someone like my dad remembers watching you as you were both growing up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like you are sort of ingrained. You become ingrained into people's lives and memories. And it's amazing, but it also means that at times when here you are and you've written and you've done all these different sorts of things, and someone comes up and says, so remember that time when you were two? You go, you know, guys, done about 800 things since then, but okay. Yeah. When I was two.
But as you say in the book, the Star Trek connection has paid you some dividends.
Yes.
Because every incarnation of Star Trek feels it is incumbent upon them to hire you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's wonderful. It is. Yeah. And listen, I didn't appreciate it early in my life. I don't think I was an a-hole about it, but I don't think I quite appreciated it like I do now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Leonard, we're both getting up there. But it's hard for me to wrap my head around this thought, is that there were people that were 10 and 12 years old watching television,
mm-hmm.
And then seeing me as a young guy. And yeah. Then all of a sudden, you know, 40 or 50 years later, they encounter me somewhere. It's got to blow people's mind. And listen, if at this point in my life, you know, we're comfortable, where everything is great, and if I can take a couple of minutes, as long as they're not a-holes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and listen, we all know alcohol can be a, you know, you if you
yes.
if you want instant a-hole, just add alcohol.
Pretty much. Yes. Yes. You
know, so, but as long as it's not that, for me to take a couple of minutes and relate to somebody and give them a little story. That's why I like going to the conventions, you know, the pop conventions or
absolutely.
The horror conventions. It's fun. It's fun for me. And I know it leaves in a memory, and God bless them.
Yeah. But why not? And why not?
That is something beautiful that I think does come with age, where when you're younger, you might be going, really, guys, really? As time passes, you say, okay, I understand it now. I get it. And I mean, the running joke for us is that every time someone comes up to my dad and says, my grandmother just loves you, we have to stand there and go, oh, kid.
Yeah.
Oh, kid.
But then that's the truth.
Please send the best to your grandmother. You know,
but you know what? But that is simply the truth. And,
yep.
And if somebody's grandmother loves your dad.
Yep.
It's better than saying, boy, my grandmother knows him. What a
my grandmother hated that guy. Yeah. It's okay. I'll just say he's Siskel or Ebert. It's fine. Yeah. We'll just scoot it right along, man.
Yeah. So you get a call.
Yeah.
Someone says to you, perhaps your agent, you want to go out for a part in a new Western starring Nicolas Cage? And you say,
yes.
Yes.
First of all, I knew the director. Brett Donahue was a fellow that produced a movie I was in several years ago called The Music Within,
mm-hmm.
with Ron Livingston and Michael Sheen. It was actually mm-hmm. before Michael Sheen played David Frost in Ron's movie.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't work with him, but he was in the movie. So I heard that this movie was getting made, and I do like to work. I'm a lot like my dad. I love gainful employment.
Mm-hmm.
And I read this. I mean, I did read the script, and I saw the character, and he's an interesting guy. I mean, I'm starting to play the crusty old guys now, and I love it. I love doing that. Eustace was an interesting character. He's, you know, the nicest guy of a bunch of bad guys.
Hmm.
And I'm glad I got to work with Nick one day. I mean, we were on the movie together, but listen, the only day that we worked together was the day that I shot him and he killed me.
Perfect.
I hope I just didn't do a spoiler alert there. But I knew Nick. I met Nick back in the 80s briefly. And sure. A nice fellow, and I watched his career, and what a wonderful career he's had, and the fact that he's you know, dusting off his acting chops and going out and doing it again on in Pig and,
yeah.
and the massive that funny
unbearable movie. Weight of massive talent, something like yes.
Which I thought, you know, listen, Nick's got it right. If you can't poke a little fun at yourself,
exactly.
Then what good are you? You know, you can't, even William Shatner is kind of poking fun at himself.
Right? Oh, yes, of course. Of course.
I love that. And may I say, the type of character you're talking about, Gabby Hayes, also lived in Toluca Lake.
Yes, I didn't know that. I did
also
not
lived
know.
In Toluca Lake. Just saying.
Well, important Toluca to me. I learned that, and I don't let anybody forget it.
No.
No.
Well, the film is called The Old Way.
Yes, The Old Way with Nick Cage and another actor, Noah Lagarde, plays an incredibly bad villain. It's probably just about played out in theaters, but it's going to be a streamer. Mm. And, you know, for people who want to see Nick Cage's first Western and watch me run around or ride around on a horse. I have two artificial hips. For me to get on a horse is a trip. Not only did I get on a horse, I rode one around. I shot somebody on a horse.
You should not only see the movie because you should see the movie, but you should also see the movie for the sake of Clint Howard's hips. Just yeah. remember what they went through for your entertainment. Yeah. You know?
Well, I appreciate it. I do. And it's fun to work. And,
yeah.
and I'm real proud of the movie for a little Western. For a little Western, it has a lot of nuance. Ryan Kira Armstrong is wonderful as Nick's daughter. And I felt like that Brett did a really good job with, you know, limited resources to go up to Montana and shoot a wonderful little movie, a wonderful little Western. And, you know, it's the great thing about it is it's Nicolas Cage, Academy Award winning actor. It's Nicolas Cage's first Western. So
yeah, well, hard to believe he's been at it a long time. Else. He's done a little yeah. of everything else.
But we're a household that loves Westerns, so yeah. we're going to be okay with that.
Yeah, we are behind you 100%.
As I say, sitting right behind my dad is this Hopalong Cassidy pillow.
God.
Of course there is.
I am surprised we hadn't crossed paths.
It's shocking,
same here.
Honestly.
Same yeah. here. Well, maybe we'll get some garlic bread from the smokehouse and break bread together.
At the drop of a hat, Leonard. Drop of a hat.
I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to look in Variety for when you're working, and I'm going to call the right guy to find you, and we will make sure that there's garlic bread.
Clint, hey, please. Let's not let that drift away. Let's really try to make that happen. This is maybe something that, yeah, let's do that.
The folks here have all of our information. They can give you anything you need, and you two really should. I think you might fall in love.
Well, I'm already in love, Leonard. I'm sorry.
I get it, man. No, it's such a pleasure to get to speak to you, Clint. It really, really is. And thank you for giving us your time and your stories.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And until we meet again soon, isn't that what? Yeah. No.
Until we meet again. Yes.
We'll just say happy trails.
That's right.
Happy trails, Leonard. Bye-bye.
Same to you, Clint. Bye-bye. Well, that was fun.
You know, it makes it so much better when you know that what you see is real.
Yeah.
And his love of my mom is saying, yeah, my mom actually sat and listened to this interview, which does not usually happen, but it's a beautiful thing. It really is. Knowing that family was real. And the fact that so many people grew up watching all of them. And then now people are watching Bryce Dallas Howard, Ron's daughter, who That's is right. so talented. And she has that same thing. She has that real quality and that honesty to her. And I guess that's just a Howard trademark.
It's true.
You know?
And she wrote a lovely foreword.
She did, yeah.
The book came out 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But somehow it slipped by me. When we confirmed this interview, I said, I've got to read this now.
And you've loved it.
And I've enjoyed every bit of
it. You loved it.
And so I recommend it highly.
Yeah, it absolutely. As I say, we're very grateful for his time. And it just makes me so happy to hear all of those stories.
Yeah.
As for you folks, you can find me and my dad on Instagram and Twitter at Leonard Maltin, at Jesse Maltin. He's also on Facebook. You can also go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews, book roundups, and all kinds of good stuff. There's actually a new book roundup that just went up. Lots of interesting stuff there. You can also watch our live streams on Sundays on YouTube, which is Maltin on Movies there. And then there's the Patreon.
Patreon. if you want to help support what we do and enable us to keep doing it.
And we really, really appreciate it. If you can hear my mother, she says she needs to go shopping.
But only for necessities. only for necessities.
Only for the eggs that have now become difficult to find.
Patreon.com/Maltin on Movies. Patreon.com/Maltin on Movies. We appreciate every contribution.
And we'll see you next week.
Take care, folks.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.